Blog Talk Radio.
But anyway, with that all said,
commercial right now.
Well, good morning. The phone number to call in right now is 941-745-1490. That's 941-745-1490. And this is, It's just strange. Here we go. I hit the Dell computer. Open this up. And what does this say? So I'm playing it and I'm not hearing it. You're hearing it. I'm not hearing it. All right, let's try that.
Legal protection is good, and Legal Shield is the best. As a small business owner, you can enroll with Legal Shield for just $75 a month for 1 to 50 employees, or $125 a month for 51 to 100 employees. Unexpected legal questions arise every day, and with Legal Shield on your side, your business will have access to a top-quality law firm for covered situations. Make the smart decision for your business and choose to give your business legal protection today for just $75 a month or $125 a month. Only with Legal Shield. Worry less, live more.
All right.
And I am Mr. Mallet, the host of the show.
I am your legal associate.
It's so important.
That's worth repeating. There, the echo is gone. Good. I got some things going here. Now we got things fixed, and we're broadcasting both live on 1490 AM Tampa Bay. WWPR. And we're also broadcasting on the Block Talk Radio Network. Now, some of you listeners out there listening on 1490, you can call in on the local number. The best number to call me at, and I will give priority to those people who call this number, 347 989-0132. It's 0132. And I just did a Legal Shield ad. And if you want more information about Legal Shield, you can call me after the show. My number is 813-924-7994. That's 813-924-7994. And you can go to the website. Don't go to LegalShield.com. Go to the website. Go to the website, Mallett Agency, MallettAgency.com. Good morning. It's your gavel.
Oh, thank you. Good morning, Mitch. Where have you been?
I'm here, Lawrence.
Oh, okay, good.
I'm busy.
Another great show. I was wondering, what is your...
Yeah, because you call me every day.
No, I don't.
Weird hours, and you block your call.
I have no idea what you're talking about. Listen, Benjamin Netanyahu, where do you fall? What side are you on? Are you on the side that the Democrats will not attend the speech? Or where do you, the question is, where do you fall?
Oh, who is he? Is he somebody? I don't know who he is.
You don't know who Benjamin Netanyahu is?
No.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense.
All right, I'll answer your question.
Well, thank you, Mitch. That would be very good.
And those of you who are listening on the
I know, five times you've been over there. What is the answer? Where do you fall?
Hold on, Lawrence. Where do I fall? I'm going to go listen to him speak.
Should the Democrats also go and listen to...
Lawrence, call back on 347-989-0132. I'll repeat that number for you. So if you want to continue this conversation, that's the number I want you to call on. 347-989-0132. Now, those of you listening on the archives, you know... the topic, and those of you who found me on Block Talk Radio, you know, because the subject of the show is Mr. Netanyahu's views on Iran, U.S. Obama, and his speech in Congress. That's who. Let me see. Lawrence, go call me on the other station. All right. I took some quotes out of here from the New York Times. And it says, Iranian-American officials have ended a round of high-level nuclear talks here on Monday, considering a proposal that would strictly limit for at least 10 years Iran's ability to produce nuclear material, but gradually erase restrictions on Tehran in the final years of any deal. Now, that has me concerned. Mr. Netanyahu, in a dramatic speech in September 2012, during which he drew a red line across a cartoon bomb, said at the time that Iran was, well, in the second stage of enriching uranium and could complete the final stage by next spring, at most by next summer. It goes on here, but I do want to say he said that in 2012, September. So that's about 2.5 years ago. I would say, according to Mr. Netanyahu, his predictions are wrong. Why are they wrong? Because Mr. President Obama, has been negotiating with the Iranians and got them to put a hold on their nuclear weapons program. We need to remember this. The Obama administration also got inspectors in all the nuclear facilities to inspect those nuclear facilities, not every once in a while, but on a daily basis, on a continuous basis. They're like full-time. They're like employees. They probably share coffee with the Iranian scientists there. They're there continuously watching and monitoring what's going on. So Netanyahu's prediction hasn't held up. Why? Because the Obama administration has stepped in through peaceful means, has negotiated with the Iranians. that needs to be pointed out, because that doesn't get mentioned. Because if you listen to the right wing, if you listen to guys like Lawrence, which I do welcome him back if he wants to call, and if you'd like to call, 347-989-0132. Give us a call. And we have a caller on the other line. Hello. Good morning.
You didn't answer the question, Mitchell.
Right, call back.
Where do you stand? Why are you afraid, Neville Chamberlain?
Because it's hard for you to be heard on the archive when you...
Well, that can be heard, Neville.
Listen,
why don't you discuss the difference?
Just call the other number, Lawrence. If you want to be archived, there you go. When the reactor begins operation... production of plutonium will begin at a quantity sufficient to produce, and this is Netanyahu's quote from that speech, to produce one bomb a year. But there will be no use for weapons as long as there's no nuclear fuel reprocessing plant, said the 6-page document. Bottom line, though, Iran at this stage is not performing the activity necessary to produce weapons. It is working close gaps in areas that appear legitimate, such as enrichment reactors, which will reduce the time required to produce weapons from the time the instruction is actually given. Now, this is a complex issue that the right wing likes to boil down into talking points. Now, Lawrence asked me a question. I'm going to answer it, but I have to give some backdrop. See, Lawrence just wants to go, what's the answer to that? Where do you fall? Where do I fall? How about where do I stand? Or what's my opinion? It's all the same thing. However, quick little answers don't really answer the question. It gets people riled up. It gets people angry because they hear these short questions and short answers, and that's exactly the tactics that Fox News deploys on a daily, every 5-minute basis on their news network. I call it the foxhole, and Lawrence is stuck down the foxhole. I keep making a rope ladder for Lawrence to climb out, but he's so far down there, I don't know if I can make one long enough. And you may have friends who are just the same way. And a rope ladder needs to be made up of truth and clarity of reality. And you'll see the delusion that takes place down in the foxhole. Not only are you down in the foxhole, you're in a bubble down in the foxhole. Now, what's going on in Washington this week? And I'm going to, for full disclosure, Netanyahu is not only coming to Washington to speak, but the annual APAC, the American-Israeli Political Action Committee, which is kind of the umbrella organization some refer to as the Israeli lobby. The convention's taking place in Washington starting this Sunday and continuing through Monday and continuing through Tuesday, and I will be there, and Netanyahu will be speaking there as well. And I will be listening to his speech, and hold on, it's your gavel.
Why won't the Democrats listen to it?
Lawrence, I'm getting to it. Why can't you call the other number?
Well, no, because you're afraid to discuss it with me. You're afraid to debate me. You're a cowardly host. Where's your co-host?
Lawrence, do you listen to my show, or you just call up? I am answering it and having you call going, rah, 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 rah. What about the Democrats? What about this? I'm putting the whole picture together here. There's the backdrop of Iran. Netanyahu has leaked information about the negotiations between the United States and the Iranians because he was included in that inner circle. He was included in that inner circle because the Obama administration... hello, it's your gavel, Lawrence.
Neville Chamberlain, Lawrence. You are like...
Lawrence, I know you can hear me, but we can't hear you. You can call back on the other line, or you can just sit there, because I don't know if you're listening in between the phone calls, all right? just don't know. But I'm getting to all this. You have to step back and look at all the variables. You can't just pick and choose your variables, Lawrence. So Netanyahu's government was included in the consultations that John Kerry was leading with the Iranians on trying to come up with a peaceful means to resolve their quest for a nuclear weapon, which I am totally against the Iranians having a nuclear weapon. And I am totally comfortable with any president of the United States that says, I will not take anything off the table, including a military strike against those facilities, to enforce that, which is what the Obama administration has said. I backed the Obama administration on that. And I'm as fearful as anyone can possibly be with the idea that the Iranians would have a nuclear weapon, because I don't trust them with a nuclear weapon. You know, everyone cries about the poor Palestinians and this and that, and on some level my heart goes out to the Palestinians. Those are people. They are people. They're human beings who got kind of stuck in this section of history. But at least let's not us forget that the rest of the Arab world won't open up their borders to the Palestinians and say, hey, things are so bad there, you can come here. Now, actually, the Palestinians living in the West Bank have it pretty well. They have it better than most Arabs in the Arab world. Those in Gaza who choose to take the cement and all the money and build tunnels and rockets instead of building an infrastructure to improve their daily lives don't have it so well. And there's about 1.5 million of them living on a strip of land, if I can use some local landmarks, to southern Tampa Bay, which is where we're broadcasting out of. The size of Gaza goes from about the Skyway Bridge, 5 miles wide, down to about Venice. And at the southern end, it opens up to about 12 miles wide. And there's a border that's about 12 miles long with Egypt that is like as shut down as any Israeli border, probably less, because the Israelis do let the Palestinians in Gaza, and sometimes they do and sometimes they don't, depending on their behavior, come into Israel to work. When things were going well, back in the 80s and 90s, the people, guys, were flowing in and out of Israel on a daily basis. Some people think, oh, well, Gaza's not really part of Israel. It was part of Egypt. It's not part of Israel. It's kind of like stuck there because Egypt lost it in the 67 war. Israel didn't really want it. And what has happened? Gaza's kind of onto itself because it's no longer part of Egypt. Egypt should take it back, open up the border, and say, you live in Gaza, you're Egyptian citizens, you're welcome to go wherever you want. 1.5 million people, I would say, within a year or two, would drop to about 500,000. In some ways, it's a beautiful strip of land, Gaza. It's along the Mediterranean coast. It's beautiful. Just too many people trying to live on it. Hello, it's your gavel.
Neville Chamberlain.
Oh, Lawrence.
Neville Chamberlain. You were.
All right, I'm not taking any more calls on the 1490 number. If you want to call, here's the number to use. It's a better number. 347-989-0132. All right. There's a lot of complexities to what's going on in the Middle East, and you got the backdrop of ISIS, which is not only in Syria, in Iraq, and in Sinai, and now is poised to take over Libya, but the Egyptians have got involved in that. All this stuff is going on in the Middle East, and the Iranians want to build a bomb, and Netanyahu then leaks to the world some of the negotiations. Parts of it, that don't by itself look bad. Looks like things aren't going well. Well, maybe they're going better. Now, because of Netanyahu has gotten together with the Republicans, Mitchell, yes, my namesake, because my name is Mitch Mallett, and Boehner, the leaders of the House and the Senate, gotten together and they said, hey, let's invite Netanyahu. Netanyahu works closely with the Republicans. People say, oh, Obama doesn't like Netanyahu. Well, it's also a fact, and I would say even more so, that Netanyahu doesn't like Obama and has done everything he could from day one that Obama was in office to try to make Obama look bad. I could spend the rest of the half an hour I have left illustrating that, but I'm not going to take that time. I'm just going to have to, you're going to have to accept that as a premise that exists. The two, the Republicans in Washington, work hard to make sure that Netanyahu gets reelected, and he's got a close election taking place in about 3 weeks from now. Netanyahu's running ads on Israeli TV showing that I can stand up to the United States. The Hebrew word he uses in translated English is against. Ben-Gurion, and then he refers to Ben-Gurion, the founder of the founding prime minister of Israel, from the labor movement, from the left side, who butted heads many times with Truman. Netanyahu's trying to portray himself in the same light. The fact is, on many levels, Obama has done wonderful things and has come through for Israel on every level possible. When Gaza was being invaded, and the invasion of Gaza, I wouldn't call it an invasion. I'm using terms from people way to the left of me. You know, we got the Gaza thing again. Gaza's shooting off 20,000 rockets over the last several years into Israel. And the rockets keep getting bigger and bigger. And where are most of the rockets made? They're made in Iran. So the complexity of the whole situation exists. If you're sitting in Texas or Arizona or New Mexico or Southern California and there are rockets being shot off from drug lords in Mexico, what would you want your government to do? Some people go, oh, well, you know, these aren't such big rockets. No, they land in someone's home and the home is obliterated. People have been killed. Oh, now the Israelis have what's called the Iron Dome. So most of these rockets are shot down. So what's the big deal? I'm giving you the defenders of the Palestinians, which I am certainly not one of them. And, you know, there should be an equal response. Well, how do you destroy all the rockets? How do you destroy all those? And Lawrence, I see you there. I'm going to get to you in a second, and thank you for calling 347-989-0132. I'm going to get to you in just a moment. So Israel went into Gaza, and when Israel moved into Gaza to wipe out the rockets and destroy the tunnels, which I support 100%, that action, and Hamas. And where did Hamas come from, by the way? How did Hamas take power in Gaza? They didn't have power. It was during the Bush second term. My mind is telling me that may not be right, but it was certainly during the Bush years when George Bush was saying, we're promoting democracy, we're invading Afghanistan, we're invading Iraq, and we're promoting democracy. And then the Bush administration put a lot of pressure on Israel because the other Arab countries are going, well, if you believe in democracy, why isn't Israel having free elections for the Palestinians? So George Bush asked Netanyahu, hey, have free elections, and the response was, well, if we have free elections right now in Gaza, Hamas, the terrorist organization, will win, because they also set themselves up as a political party. And, you know, Hamas is like, there's many facets to Hamas. They take a lot of money from the Arab world, and then they channel it as welfare benefits and benefits to the Palestinian people living in Gaza, which in many ways is good, but it gets them the loyalty because they control the money. So they control the ability to provide services. So they buy the hearts and minds of the people with these services, and then they commit basically aggression and war and terrorism with rockets. And Israel, and they came to some terms and said, hey, we're going to allow cement in, and we're going to allow this and this in, because we don't want you to become an armed camp. Israel pulled out unilaterally years ago. They tried to come to some peace terms, and the Israeli said, no, we're just going to pull out. You can have it. You can be your own government. And people said it'll become an armed camp, which is what it became. And George Bush said to Israel, put a huge amount of pressure on Israel, saying, have elections. No, Hamas will win. Because right now they got Fatah in there, and it was running it, which is the kind of the continuation of the PLO, which sounds kind of evil, but they've kind of modified and moderated themselves to something that's reasonable to work with. Hamas won the elections. Thank you, George Bush, for not taking the advice and shoving that down the Israelis' throats, and now you got Hamas in power. When Israel's running out of anti-rockets, these missiles they would shoot up at the rockets coming at them and destroying them when they were getting very close to running out, they turned to the United States, which manufactures them, and says, we need more. We need about 350 million more. And Obama said, I'm ordering the United States to provide them, and he turned to Congress and said to Congress, we need to do this quickly. If not, I'm going to do it by executive order, which is exactly what happened. And Congress responded quickly and ordered it. Everyone got together for Israel. The Democrats and Republicans got together. Obama pushed for it and got $350 million worth of more missiles, so because all the rockets being shot off. And in the United Nations, when push came to shove, in the United Nations, on the numerous times since Obama took office, the administration has backed Israel 100%. The thing that Netanyahu doesn't like is that Obama, like Bush before, like Clinton before, like Bush before, like Reagan before, like Carter before, and maybe going back to Ford and Nixon, the U.S. has always put pressure on Israel not to expand settlements in the West Bank. And Netanyahu has definitely pushed for settlements, and the expansion of settlements have grown tremendously. And the Obama administration has put pressure on Israel. Matter of fact, when John Kerry went to Israel, or was it the vice president who went to Israel and arrived there? As he arrived, Netanyahu announces a big new settlement authorized by the Israeli government in the West Bank of 2,200 units. Those are apartments or homes. That's where the clash comes in. Netanyahu would rather have a Republican president that will tolerate and not put the pressure on to build settlements. That's the bottom line here. That's what this is all about. And the whole thing's political. Secretly, Boehner and Mitchell invited Netanyahu to come speak to a joint session of Congress secretly without informing the White House whatsoever. 2 weeks before his election, which coincides with the AIPAC convention, excuse me, and then announces to the world that Netanyahu is coming to speak, catches the president off guard. And the president, what's this? This has never occurred before. Congress has had foreign heads of state speak to Congress, but it's always been in conjunction and working through the State Department and working through the White House. Foreign policy under our Constitution, Republicans like to hold the wave the Constitution, is in the hands of the White House. The White House has worked with Congress, but in this case, they chose to act as their own and carry out their own foreign policy and invite a foreign head of state. Now, I love Israel and I support Israel. I'm going as a representative of the Jewish Federation of Sarasota, Manatee County. I think there's seven of us going to the AIPAC convention starting Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, this coming week. And I'll be there, and I'll hear Netanyahu speak to the AIPAC, and AIPAC has always invited every prime minister, no matter what political party. And I'm gonna say this, and I'm going to go to Lawrence. Israel, since Harry Truman, since the founding of Israel, which is during Harry Truman's administration, so since the beginning of Israel as a formal country, has always enjoyed bipartisan support, which means both Republicans and Democrats have supported Israel. They've gotten together and supported Israel. Since Bush has been in the White House, the Republicans have decided, you know what, we can be the pro-Israeli party. We can play that up. And all my Republican friends over the last 12 or more years have come up to me, maybe 14 years, and have said, Mitch, if you're Jewish, you got to vote Republican because the Republicans are the pro-Israeli party. You know what I say to them? I say, how dare the Republicans try to hold themselves out as being more pro-Israel than the Democrats? And anyone who does that is actually hurting Israel. Any Republican and any Democrat who says, no, you should vote Democrat because it's more pro-Israel. Israel needs to enjoy both parties, because if the Republicans are extremely successful in this tactic and saying we're the party of Israel, that means, because there's people against Israel politically in this country, and they haven't been able to infiltrate either party. And I want to tell you, they are working hard to infiltrate the Democratic Party. They're not having really any success. But they're trying, and they're figuring, well, the Republicans are doing that, we'll grab the Democratic Party. That would be the worst thing that could happen to Israel. It shouldn't be a partisan issue. Support of Israel should be an American issue. All right, Lawrence, you're on the air.
Okay, I guess, thank you. Mitch, it is clear to me, and it has to be clear to any of your listeners, you were just explaining why you put party before country, and certainly now Israel. I am saying to you, why are there... What? Yeah, I know. Yeah, give me your excuses. Now shoot the messenger. That would be your next ploy. I'm saying, why are there Democrats not going to listen to Netanyahu? Not that you're going to, But why are there Democrats not going to listen to Netanyahu? What do you hear when you hear the excuse? Go ahead, Neville. Go ahead.
You can call me Mitch, Lawrence.
Okay, well, you're so close to Neville Chamberlain's scenario.
No, I'm not. You can.
Yes, you are. So what? The Democrats not going to listen to Netanyahu. Talk about that. Don't change the subject.
I'm not changing the subject.
Well, go ahead. Talk about that.
Well, you got to be quiet long enough for me to get a word out, Lawrence.
Mitch, you have consumed 99.
Haven't two Democratic senators invited Netanyahu to speak to them? I also want to tell you this. This agreement. Hang in there, Lawrence. I'll bring you back. Bring you back in a second. This agreement that, and the other caller, hold on 1 second. This agreement that the Obama administration has made with Iran, I think is a little rushed. I think it's rushed because Obama wants to, before Netanyahu gets here, he wants to say, we have some terms. And what it does, it certainly gives the appearance over the next 5 to 10 years that the Iranians won't have weapons. Now, those inspectors stay there. And it kind of kicks the can down 10 years. It doesn't make it permanent, but it certainly undermines Netanyahu's ability to get in front of Congress and say the Iranians could have nuclear weapons in the next year. So I think it's a little rushed. So all this political playing has caused a rushed agreement, which we had to yield, as we, the United States, had to yield some concessions to the Iranians, which I'm a little disappointed with. And the other caller, go ahead, caller, it's your gavel.
Hey, Mitch. This is the good Lawrence. Long time no see, old buddy.
Hey, Lawrence, how are you?
Okay.
Lawrence is to the left, and Lawrence is to the right.
To Florida, yeah, I used to come over and chit-chat with you at the station.
I remember. How are you?
Okay. I finally got my hernia fixed, you know.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, back in 13, yeah. I got tired of going to the Clinton emergency, you know, first of the year, January, and they had to go to emergency, and then 4th of July in 2013, they were crowded. Finally, I went to see a specialist, and she did a good job on me, man.
Well, that's good to hear, but
we only
have like a little more than 15 minutes left, so let's stay.
Let me tell you something. You're off the air. I got two radios going, and when Lawrence got on about 5 minutes ago, it went dead. You're off the air.
Hey, Valerie.
You're off the air.
Are we off the air? They're having troubles.
I was with
the transmitter. Valerie is working on it.
Yeah.
And we're listening. And if it's on and off, you can listen. You can go to itchyourgavel.com and listen through the stream.
Yeah. I don't have a computer. But anyway, I'm trying to tell you.
Well, you can call. You can call.
And then when you're talking.
You can call this number, 347-989-0132. Right now, because I'm using one of the phone lines in the radio to connect the two together, we only have one call in line on the other number. But I have 1,000 lines.
Excuse me. When you're talking, there's on the air, it's like skips. It skips, too. Ever since you started, there's skips in there. Okay, I'll hang up.
If you want to call back, write this number down, and you can listen through the phone.
Oh, okay.
347-989-0132. If you don't hit the one button, I don't call on you.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And then while you listen, if you change your mind and you want to talk, you hit the one button, and that alerts me that you want to speak.
Okay, thank you, guys.
347-989-0132. All right. Lawrence, I want to ask you a question. Why did Boehner and Mitchell have to invite Netanyahu to speak to Congress without informing the White House or the State Department that they were doing such? Why is that? Lawrence?
I don't know. They hate black guys.
Yeah, all right. Well, that's all right.
Wait.
I'm going to bring you back in a second. We got another caller. Hello, caller?
Yeah, it's Valrico Bob here. I'm calling from Valrico. My name is Bob. And this Lawrence guy, you got good Lawrence, bad Lawrence. They obviously work for the radio. I hear them all the time on the radio, on other stations. And yeah. I know what you're doing. He's playing the dumb Republican so you can sound gooder when you talk about the Democrats. So you make you sound smart because he's so stupid. And I think you should fire him and hire me because I'm a better dumb Republican than he is. I went to Nam. I went to Vietnam, man. So I'm a. I've supported the Republicans all my life, and I paid for it.
Talk right now, because they got both on.
He's a dodger. He's a draft dodger. I heard him on other shows. I heard him on Rick on the radio. He's a draft dodger.
And would you like to debate me, schmuck?
And he says bad words too, and he calls himself.
Yeah, he's bad words. You know, the little thing that you got. You're a schmuck, and I'll debate you. Put up or shut up and hang up.
He's rude, he's crude, and he's attacking the messenger. He does everything that he doesn't like what anyone else does. He's a hypocrite. Now, I don't know if he works for the radio as a dumb Republican. He couldn't be for real. Even I'm not that dumb. And I'm a Republican because I think that the woman Republicans are more prettier looking than the female Republicans. You look at Elizabeth Warren, and you look at Clinton, Hillary, and then you look at Bachman and Sarah Palin, they're more prettier. That's the only reason why I like Republicans, because they're better looking. And anyway, they're just figureheads. They're models. They're male models, female models. It's the ghost government that runs everything. So it doesn't matter. So I'd rather have the pretty ones. But that Lawrence guy, I know dozens of people who don't listen to 1490 because of him. To get rid of him. He's no good for the station. And the other show, The Morning Edge. I know a dozen people who stop listening because of Don Lawrence. He's too dumb, too rude, too crude, too hypocritical, and he's stupid.
Hello,
am I on the air?
You are on the air.
Oh, okay. So what do you think, Mitch Ballett?
What do I think? I get some feedback from people tell me why you let Lawrence on. I don't let him dominate the show because he wants to make it his show.
Well, but he works for the radio station, right? Tell the truth.
You know, I listen to right-wing radio, and I'm appalled. And one of the things that appalls me is they say, this is what a Democrat is. This is what a liberal is. And I say to myself, because they can't hear me, sometimes I'm shouting back at the radio, and I go, you don't have a clue what a Democrat is, and if your definition of a Democrat were true, I wouldn't be a Democrat. You don't even understand what a Democrat is. So they can't even paint a picture of what a Democrat is in all honesty, because if they did, a lot of people would go, hey, I'd like to be a Democrat. So they have to lie what a Democrat is. They have to lie what a liberal is. So you get all these people out there that listen to Fox News and Rush Limbaugh and Hannity and all these other right-wing shows, and they all sing the same song, and they think that's reality because Goebbels said if you tell a lie long enough, people will accept it as the truth. And then they go.
Well, that's true. That's how Rush Limbaugh got so big. He kept saying he's great and he's a guru and all that stuff, and now people believe him, and he's making millions of dollars. You say you're lying long enough. That's what Hitler did.
He's advertisers right now. He's having trouble. He's even lost some stations. But what happens is when it comes time to vote, there's a lot of working-class Americans who go vote Republican, and they're hurting their own interest. Because, you know, had they voted Democrat since 1980, the minimum wage would probably be somewhere between $15 and $20 an hour. And the economy would be on fire. It would be phenomenal. Now, you know, people go, oh, raise the minimum wage. You're going to suddenly raise it from 8 to 15. What a shock. That could put some businesses out. Well, you can graduate it in. You can do 25 cents a month, which is kind of quick, but it could be absorbed. And if suddenly if everyone was making at least $15 an hour, suddenly the working poor, the people working two, three jobs, putting in 30, more likely 40, 50, 60 hours a week above the tables, would no longer qualify for food stamps. The Republicans like to call Obama the food stamp president because they go, look how many people are on food stamps. Yeah, Republicans, because of the inflation that's going on and the fact that wages aren't going up, but the government recalculates that, hey, you need food stamps making that little amount of money. So more people are on food stamps because they need it to survive. So all these companies out there paying less than $12 an hour, we're subsidizing their payroll. The federal government's subsidizing their payroll. That's part of the reality that's going on here. That's exactly what's going on here.
Well, America was bought and sold by the trillionaires who run everything. They runs it all.
Well, they don't
they
sell
bought
it.
And sold everything. This ain't no, America no more.
No, the Koch brothers, they just keep buying. And now they pledged almost $1 billion in campaign money for the 2016 election, which is more money than the Republicans or the Democrats will spend. They're going to be a bigger financial variable than either party. One family.
Well,
and then you combine it with the Walton family and a few other families, you're probably looking at $1.5 billion from all the big billionaires from the Republican side. Yeah, and there's a few billionaires that are Democrats and have a good heart and understand social responsibility, and the Republicans go, look at them. They can't compete with the amount of billionaires. Even Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney wanted to run again. Koch brothers go, Mitt already lost. We don't want him. He'll lose again. So they told Mitt, and they did it. We're going to put $1 billion in, and we're not supporting you. You're really going to try to run a campaign against our $1 billion? Because we'll use it against you. We'll make sure you don't get the primary vote. Mitt Romney, who had like a week and a half, of like, I'm about to run. I'm going to do it again. All of a sudden goes, I'm not running. There's no way I can compete with the Koch brothers who want to pick and choose. They got climate. They've been parading this scientist around who said he's from Harvard. It turns out he's not from Harvard. It turns out his credentials are all bogus. But the oil industry gives him about $1.5 million to run around and say all these things and saying climate change is not real.
Money should not be, oh, God. We fight a revolution in this country in 1770, whatever, and against the king because he was rich and we the people. I think there's going to be another revolution, Mitch. I think if a Republican wins like Jeb Bush, you know, the Bush family killed over 1 million Muslims, and they don't forget that. And Bush is going to kill another 1 million, and we're going to have a war, a big war. There's going to be the 99% are going to take over. It's going to get ugly. The Republicans have destroyed this country.
If Bush wins the White House, the Muslim world will not be happy. And it's going to be a huge recruiting tool for ISIS, which is recruiting people. And
because
and
of people like Bush's, at one time, you know, Iraq was a beautiful country, you know. They were like the third richest country, oil-rich nation, and that was Mesopotamia that had the oldest museums in the world. Now, all that stuff is in the Bush family library.
Let me ask you
a question. They stole their
culture. Let me ask you a question. If.
Yeah.
And you don't have this choice, but if you had this choice and the costs were the same and you could choose from having your electricity produced from coal or solar, what would you pick?
Solar is cheaper. The sun is for free. It's given to you by God. Oil comes from hell, from the devil under the ground.
That's right.
I pick solar because it's up.
Yeah, I asked that question last night. I recorded it. It's 18 seconds. Here, listen to this.
Here we go. If you had your choice, and you don't, between coal or solar, and the cost of your electricity was the same, what would you choose?
Solar! Whoa!
There you go. That was actually at DeMante County. I got to fully disclose. That was at DeMante County Democratic meeting yesterday at our headquarters. And there was probably 40, 50 people in there. That was their reaction. They didn't know what I was going to ask. That was not rehearsed. I just had the record button on my phone.
And what did they say? They choose what?
Solar. Everyone just said solar all at once.
So why isn't the whole state solar? I don't get it.
You know,
why can't we be solar? The whole state, every house should have a solar panels. Why not?
You know, if we had the political will 30 years ago, if Jimmy Carter had his way, totally had his way, you know, if you look at the Energy Act of 1978, you saw a lot of good stuff in there. And still, some of the things that he wanted in there, had he gotten reelected, this country would be a lot better off, because I would say that under Jimmy Carter's second administration, which he didn't have, all new housing and all new construction, all new commercial buildings, home residences, apartment buildings, they'd all have to employ solar energy. They don't have to. Today, why isn't every new construction? Because if you can now take, if you build a new house today, or if you finance a new house, if you finance a new house today, new or used, and you go, I want to put solar electricity, some solar hot water onto that house, because the amount of space it takes up and the amount of money it costs to put a couple solar hot water collectors on a house will heat your water directly with the sun's heat. About 90%, 95% of your hot water during the course of a year will come from the sun here in Florida. It'll be about 80 to 85% New England, believe it or not. And then you put solar photovoltaic on your house, you could basically take your house off the grid. You could literally, and you could be done today, and you could be paying less. Actually, if you amortize into a 30-year loan, your savings will be about twice as much as what your electric, what your addition to your mortgage payment would be. So if you were going to save if your electric bill would have been $200 a month, your addition to your mortgage will be less than $100 a month. And you
why doesn't everybody know this then? Why isn't it on television or something? Well, the radio talk about this. I mean, who sold hot water heaters to Florida people that you got to plug in electricity when any hose out it, put your hose on, it's in the sun, it's hot water. Whoever sold the hot water heaters, the Floridians, is the same guy who sold refrigerators to the Eskimos. They used to bury
as a country, and thank you to Obama, and I got to wrap up with this, so just hang in there a second, because this guy, I got about a minute left to the show. We can thank the Obama administration, who took 750,000 gas guzzlers off the road, who told the auto industry, you want to be saved? Suddenly you got cars that are driving at 70 miles an hour and getting mid-sized cars getting 37 miles to the gallon. Suddenly, right, and here in Florida, a few years ago, I used to say half our electricity in Florida is coming from oil. Well, now it's coming from natural gas. So all that oil is no longer being imported, and our electric consumption of oil is no longer. So when we want to fill up at the tank, we're not competing for the same barrels of oil from the cars. So the price of energy has actually gone down. So when you go and invest and conserve and go more fuel efficient and you buy LED light bulbs, which if you change all your light bulbs, will probably save you.
You're listening to 1490 AM, WWPR, Bradenton, Sarasota, Tampa Bay.
All right, I'm out of here. See you later. See you next Thursday.
with SRN News. I'm Mitch Thomason at the National Religious...